This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Hello again to everybody at TFMR. It's Thursday, December the 3rd. It's time for your Thursday conversation. And as we approach the end of the year, I mean, crying out loud, we've only got 4 weeks left, thankfully. We got to start looking ahead to 2021. I know that's what I'm starting to do, and I'm sure many of you are as well. To that end, I thought, what a great time to visit again with our old friend Alistair McLeod. We haven't spoken with Alistair for 90 days. Time goes so fast these days. It almost seems longer than that. Anyway, Alistair, of course, is the head of research at Gold Money. Gold Money being one of the great companies out there for not only buying precious metal, but storing precious metal. Mr. Turk, long time, I mean, leader of the industry. And we're just very fortunate to consider him a friend as well. But Alistair is a longtime friend, and it's always great to visit with him. Alistair, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to talk.
That's very much my pleasure, Craig.
My friend, I think, you know what? Let's do a little Gold Money commercial first so I can get my head screwed on straight. For people that don't know what Gold Money is, tell everybody and tell them how easy it is to use.
Yeah, basically, it's a business that stores precious metals on behalf of clients on a custodial basis. In other words, it doesn't appear on our balance sheet. And importantly, it is not in the banking system. And we offer a range of vaults around the world. So it's stored in properly insured vaults. You can have it in Switzerland, Singapore, Toronto, London. I mean, there are all sorts of locations which you can choose from. And so it suits people from all over the world wanting to put their gold, to store their gold in a different jurisdiction from where they live. So that's basically what we do. You can buy and sell gold and silver, platinum group metals through our website, which is goldmoney.com. And I publish my research on goldmoney.com/research. And under that is insights. And I do an article every Thursday. In fact, there's one due to come out later on this afternoon, EST. And I do a market report on the Friday, which is tomorrow. And that also is found on the website under the research tab. So that's what we do. That's who we are. And we've grown, I think, to over $3 billion worth of storage. That's probably Canadian dollars because we are actually listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange. And I think another point worth making, because quite a lot of people sort of think, oh, well, you know, we can just go and buy and sell gold and silver. We can just accumulate gold and silver and nobody needs to know who we are and all the rest of it. And they're a bit shocked by the fact that we are required by regulators to ensure full banking standard KYC, that's Know Your Client, and anti-money laundering procedures. So we do all that, and we do all that actually to protect everybody, because the last thing you want is to have a regulator coming down and saying you're not doing your KYC properly and we're going to, you know, make life difficult or close you down or whatever. So we are fully functional, fully authorized, fully compliant. And I think everybody's got to understand that, you know, quite what that means. But we do give this facility of storing your gold and silver outside the banking system. And at a time of increasing systemic risk, which I believe is the situation at the moment, that is a very important point.
Yeah.
Anyway, commercial, and thank you for the time to do it.
Well, it's a great service. Again, goldmoney.com. And the work you do is fantastic. And so we want to support goldmoney.com so they keep supporting you. Because it's invaluable what you crank out on a weekly basis. Alistair, let's talk about gold for a second, and silver too, just kind of under the general heading of precious metal. We are up, as we speak, almost precisely 20% in dollar terms year to date, which by any measure, historically, is a pretty good year for gold. I don't see much changing as we head into the new year fundamentally. I know you watch the total notional amount of negative yielding debt. That's at all-time highs. I know you watch real rates that are moving to some of the lowest levels since the 1970s. I know you watch the ongoing debasement of not only the dollar, but the euro. As we look forward to 2021, do you see much changing? Do you forecast, you know, in another move to new all-time highs? What are your thoughts at this point on December 3rd?
Yes, I do see a lot of change, Craig. And we have got the indications now as to which way this change is going. I mean, one point I've been making in recent articles is that unbeknown to virtually everybody, we are already committing to hyperinflation. Now, when I mean hyperinflation, I'm talking about the hyperinflation of the money supply. In other words, the political imperative, if you like, is to increase the production of money to pay for the government deficit in increasing terms. And this is a really serious situation, and it is particularly serious for the dollar, against which, of course, all our other currencies are measured. And the dollar is the currency which virtually every central bank has as the major component of its reserves. So what happens to the dollar affects us all. And if the dollar goes down, we all go down. That is until someone actually comes up with a solution to the problem. And I'm sure we'll get into that in time. But if you look at the financing of your government in the second half of your last fiscal year, which was March to September, now this is actually very convenient because it was on March the 23rd that the Fed came out with a statement that they would issue as much money as it takes, you know, infinite QE.
QE to infinity.
That was the Monday after the previous Thursday, I think it was, they announced they were cutting the Fed funds rate from 1% to zero. Now, this was, on the face of it, just a response to the first COVID wave, which was beginning to sweep everywhere. I mean, this country locked down on that very date, the 23rd of March. But interestingly, time, it was around about that weekend where everything turned round. The S&P index had fallen by fully one third from, I think it was early January to that point. We saw also gold had been really slaughtered. They pushed it down to something like 1450, I think.
Yeah.
Silver, likewise, completely slaughtered. That was down to something like 11 bucks or something. Absolutely ridiculous. But not just that, but if you looked at all the commodities, I mean, oil was $23.50. It's now 45 bucks. That's up 95%. Lumber was $322, and that's trading recently in 600. That's up 86%.
Copper.
Silver. Well, copper, absolutely. Dr. Copper. That was $2.17, and that is now about $3.30. That's up 52%. Soybeans up 44.5%. Nickel, 42.6%. Aluminium, or aluminum as you'd call it, 28.5. And look at the equities. Equities, NASDAQ up 72%. S&P up 57%. And we haven't even started mentioning the real stars, cryptocurrencies. I mean, Ether up 350%. Bitcoin up over 200%. And that's all from March the 23rd.
Right.
When the Fed turned around and said, you know what? We're going to do infinite QE. We're going to buy whatever it takes to finance the government deficit, which is being generated on the back of this COVID thing. Now, the government deficit was always already running at an annualized rate of over $1 trillion. But the effect on this was to effectively produce a second half deficit. And of course, if you look over the whole year, this amount gets concealed. But the second half deficit alone was $2.77 trillion. Now, the implied second half revenue, now this is taxes and all the rest of it that the Fed gains in, was about $1.3 trillion. The balance was financed by QE. And the ratio of deficit to revenue works out at over twice. So in other words, for, you know, for two parts of the deficit was financed by inflation. Now, going back to my original statement, we are in a situation where we cannot, or you cannot get off, and we're in the same position, of inflationary financing. We are now financing government deficits, government spending, even more by inflationary means than we are through taxes. And we see no way of getting back from that appalling position.
Yeah.
Now, I know the CARES Act, $2.2 trillion, hasn't all been spent, still some in the tank. But guess what? First thing the new president, whoever he is, will do is they will produce a new stimulus, government stimulus. I mean, stimulus is the wrong word, actually, because by using inflation as a means of financing government deficits, the government deficits increasing as money is handed out left, right and center to failing businesses, people who would otherwise be unemployed and all the rest of it. But the problem with all this, and this is what I was getting to, is that we're only seeing one side of it. We can see the benefit of everybody getting lots and lots of free money, and saving the economy and saving the government or whoever else you want to save. But what we're not looking at is the cost. Now, the cost, it's not just a magic money tree, because what happens is that when you dilute the purchasing power of the dollar by increasing the quantity in circulation, which is what QE does, then you're transferring wealth from everybody in the economy to the government, for the government to do what they see fit with. Now, the result of this is that this accelerated inflation is actually killing the economy. Other things being equal, this alone will ensure that the economy tanks. And that is a problem which so few people seem to understand. But I think that a second round of another CARES Act, if you like, I think people are going to begin to look at that and say, well, this is not actually rescuing the economy. We don't necessarily know why it's not rescuing the economy. That doesn't matter. What matters is that it's quite clear that this is going to be followed by CARES Act 3, CARES Act 4, right, CARES Act 5. Now, the reason why that's the case is that, we may have forgotten that in September 2019, we had a liquidity crisis.
Right.
And the rate was driven up to 10% very briefly before the Fed came in and rescued the situation. Now, quite clearly what happened at that stage was the banks had run out of balance sheet capacity. And now they're not, if they're very heavily geared, operationally geared, because they've lent out a lot of money and they've been doing this from the Lehman crisis 12 years ago, you can see that their ability to continue to produce credit is actually very, very limited. And if anything, they will want to draw in their horns and reduce their exposure at a time when bankruptcies are really beginning to escalate.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one aspect. Another aspect, let's go back to 2018. America and China start having fisticuffs on the trade front. And what happened was, by the end of 2018, beginning of 2019, we suddenly had the expansion of global trade just came to a shuddering halt. And you saw all sorts of things happening, like shipping rates and all the rest of it just absolutely collapsing. And this put countries like Germany into recession. And we've forgotten that. And we've also forgotten what happened in 1929, when you combined the end of the bank credit expansionary cycle, which we've just done, which we've just described, with the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, which raised tariffs by around about 20% from America against everybody around the world. What happened was Wall Street collapsed from its high in September 29, all the way down to, I think it was around about July 32, mm-hmm. When it had lost 90% of its value. And that was followed by the 1930s. The only difference between then and now is that prices were measured in gold through the dollar, because the dollar was exchangeable for gold, certainly up until 1933. We then have today a situation where there is no, backing for fiat currencies. So under those circumstances, we know what the Keynesians will do. They will just print and print and print in a desperate effort to try and stop the economy running into a slump. But they won't succeed. I mean, the statistics, they're corrupting the statistics now. I mean, we know that the CPI is rubbish. You've only got to go and talk to John Williams or look at the Chatwood Index to know that actually the rate of price inflation, which is not inflation, incidentally, is the symptom of inflation. The rate of price inflation in America is closer to 10% than 1.7%. So, you know, that has all sorts of other implications. And what we are seeing as a result of that is the transfer of wealth already from the private productive sector to the generally non-productive government sector has been continuing it at a devastating pace and is about to accelerate further. So when you say what we're looking forward to in 2021, what I see is a continuance of monetary hyperinflation, and that is going to have a major effect on how foreigners look at the dollar first. And secondly, when the ordinary man wakes up to what's going on, what he will do with it. Now, we've seen this happen in history before. I mean, in the inflationary collapses in the early 1920s in Europe, which was not just Germany, but Austria, Hungary and Poland as well. No, I don't think Poland, Russia, certainly. Its currency went down the tubes. You can see that once this monetary inflation gets out of control, the effect is absolutely devastating on the underlying economy. And I'm afraid that the sequence that they had is exactly the same as the one we're seeing today. It wasn't so long ago that people were telling me, well, people will always need the dollar, so at a time of trouble, they'll go and buy the dollar. No, the problem is that they already own, according to the Treasury tick figures, a total of $28.6 trillion, which is 140% of your GDP. So the foreigners are up to the gunnels in dollar instruments. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's everything from treasuries to stocks and also cash. I mean, of that, over $6 trillion is cash and short-term treasury and commercial bills. So there is a lot of foreign ownership, and these foreigners can see that the dollar is sliding, and they've already been told by China, you know, look, what we're doing is we're going to stockpile commodities, which basically means they're dumping dollars. As we speak, the dollar's trade weighted is crashing. I mean, it really is. It's gone right through all sorts of support levels. And I really think that this is just the beginning of this dump in the dollars. And I just can't see how, when the foreigners are so heavily weighted in dollars, that any of them are going to really add to their positions. What they're going to do is they're rapidly moving into a position of fear about their dollar exposure. And that could easily halve the dollar very, very quickly. We then come on to the domestic users of the dollar. And I think that the situation at the moment is different from what we had in Germany in 1922-23 in one respect. And that is, instead of, as Keynes put it, not one man in the million understands money, we now have a situation where people have been educated through cryptocurrencies about the difference of having a form of money which has limited issue and a form of money issued by the government whose issue is effectively infinite. Mm-hmm. And this is why the first sign that we have seen of a stampede out of dollars has been into the cryptocurrencies. These are the people who understand what is going on with fiat currency. And, you know, we're looking at Bitcoin at the moment, sort of knocking on the door of $20,000. And we've got some very, very sensible people saying, well, this will go to $130,000 or whatever. I mean, you know, they're coming up with sort of unbelievable numbers where this could go. And they could well be right. So we have now in this situation, people are educated more than they ever were in the past about what governments are doing to their money. Now, the effect of that, it would seem to me, is that when people catch on just that little bit more about what's going on, then the potential for a fiat currency collapse is, and a rapid one, is very, very significant. And I would add another factor, and that is that if you look at the German economy back in the early 1920s, It was an industrial economy. It was different from, let us say, an earlier agricultural economy. Mm-hmm. When we saw the French currency collapse, they had two collapses at the time of the revolution. That was essentially agricultural. Germany was industrial. Our economy is different from that. Our economies are now financial. So the way in which everything behaves, if you like, is actually affected very substantially by what sort of economy we've got. Now, with the financial economy, I would argue that the potential for a collapse in the purchasing power of the currency is very, very sudden. We could wake up one morning and suddenly think, oh my God, what is going on? What should I be doing? Should I just get rid of paper currency because of what I see now ahead of me? You know, the crisis unfolding and all the rest of it. So, 2021 is going to be a very, very interesting year.
Yeah. Well, Alistair, yeah, that's a lot to consider, my friend. You've given me four things I want to double back to. All right. First, in this exit from the dollar. I mean, it doesn't seem that your alternative would be other fiat, right? I mean, because again, if you sell dollar and you get back euros, you know, or you get back yen or whatever, well, what good is that? Do you think this puts more stress, more flow into commodities, like you said, or gold or virtual assets? Do you think that all continues next year?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I mean, the initial effect, obviously, is that, if people are long of dollars more than anything else, then mm-hmm. they're going to sell the dollars for another currency. And amazingly, we've seen, literally as we're speaking, the euro take off, sterling take off. I mean, it's just, they've just rocketed up. China has stopped suppressing its currency. Of course, nobody talks about that now. Their currency has actually increased quite nicely, and it's up around about 9% from that 23rd of March figure. I mean, sterling is up about nearly 20%, I think, on today's move. The euro is up about 15% or something like that. The yen is the one that has been behind, and that is up, I think. I haven't measured it this morning, but I know that it's in the region of about 7 to 8% up over that period of time. Whereas, the dollar's trade weighted is now down 10%. Yeah. I mean, this is, in fact, slightly over 10%.
And Alistair, everybody's just swapping one fiat for the other. I mean, when does that stop?
Well, it stops when the crisis really hits the dollar. But people are already moving out of paper currencies. And I think this is the key point. And this is why I mentioned the cryptocurrencies and why I mentioned the commodities. Commodities in particular, I think, are a very important indicator. I mean, you can see one commodity going up and you can say, well, the reason is that there's a supply disruption or, that Chinese are trying to sort of build a stockpile of copper or whatever it might. You can always come up with an individual argument. But the fact of the matter is that when the whole commodity complex is moving up, actually what it is telling you is that against commodities, the purchasing power of the currency you measure them in, which is the dollar, is going down. So we are already seeing that. And that is something which I would expect to accelerate. I think the real anomaly in all this is that gold is only up around about 20-odd%. Right. I mean, this has been left behind. Now, we know that at the year end, and we've seen this ever since this phase of the bull market, if we can call it a bull market, actually it's a bear market in the dollar, but anyway, when gold bottomed out after its 2012 peak, every December, the run into December has been a fall in the price. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, a real jump in the price. And this is because there is this seasonality on, the December contract. Right. As that expires, what happens is that the bullion banks basically want to try and get their books straight. And part of this, as I'm sure, because I know you cover this in a far greater detail than me, and you're more knowledgeable than me about COMEX. But part of this is wiping out the call options, if you like. And it's worth noting that while everything was going up as a result of the Fed saying we're going to print, add to infinity, gold price ran up to over $2,000. And of course, lots and lots of people bought options.
Right.
And, you know, by moving the price of gold down to below $1,800, they were wiping out effectively the value of 150,000 calls mm-hmm. in approximate terms.
And killing sentiment. And
you know, it's a lovely business if you can do it.
Oh, absolutely. And they kill sentiment, which then in the West decreases yeah. physical demand, which then gets them off the hook for all their promissory notes into the GLD and allows them to extend the COMEX, because we're going to get maybe 30 or 35,000 deliveries versus 50 or 55,000 in August. I mean, there are a number of different yeah. prongs to that.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, this to my mind is an anomaly which will correct itself if yeah. we're looking into 2021. And I would see that gold actually will then move on. There is another aspect of this, and that is that there is a debate, obviously, about the relevance of cryptocurrencies and gold as future replacements for fiat currency. The problem with cryptocurrencies is that cryptocurrencies, I think, are fine so long as fiat currencies exist. If we have, say, an Argentinian situation where all the fiat currencies just go down and down and down and down, but never quite die, then you've got probably a pretty good argument for cryptocurrencies, simply because there is it is potentially such a large bubble and institutions are beginning to get into it. And incidentally, the fiat world of investment management do not get gold at all, because they're all Keynesian, but they can, you know, new kid comes on the block and they realize that this is a hedge. It's the only thing that's going up in their portfolio when everything else is going down. Well, it's not quite true, but you know what I mean?
Yes.
On that basis, yes, the institutions are now getting involved and they could drive this thing to 100,000. You know, I mean, I'm talking about Bitcoin quite easily. But the idea that cryptocurrencies will replace our medium of exchange and become our medium of exchange is, I think, completely wrong. And it's wrong for this reason. They are too volatile to be used as a medium of exchange, because what you want out of a medium of exchange is certainty and an agreement between the people who are on the one hand selling a good and on the other hand buying it. They want absolute agreement about that medium of exchange, and it has an objective value. All the price change in what we're negotiating as we buy and sell between us has got to be in the products that we're buying and selling. Now, cryptocurrencies can't really effectively do that. The other point which people do miss is the very important one, and that is that all business needs capital investment in order to proceed. I mean, an entrepreneur without capital investment, he's not going to exist. So how good is cryptocurrency in that role? The answer is it is completely useless, for the very simple reason that you cannot do a business calculation when you need to have a reasonable idea of yeah. what the value of the debt is when you're going to pay it back, say, in 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, with cryptocurrencies, you cannot do a business calculation. So from that point of view, I just do not see cryptocurrencies ever. I mean, I've only mentioned two of the real problems. I don't see how they can replace gold.
Right.
The other thing to consider is, let us assume that I am right and we are descending into a hyperinflationary hell. The effect on the purchasing power of fiat currencies obviously will be destructive, very, very destructive. But there will come a point where the destruction is so obvious and so nasty that governments will turn from, let's say, playing their own games, if you like, and trying to get reelected however often it is, to actually thinking, my goodness, we got a problem here. How can we stabilize the currency? The only way they can do it is to mobilize central bank gold reserves.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is that, you know, all these valueless dollars that we all have, whether it's in our bank account or, you know, in physical paper underneath the mattress, they then become the means of distributing the gold reserves of the central bank. And by doing that, the currency becomes stabilized.
Giving it convertibility
yeah.
again.
It effectively becomes, I mean, it's immediate. It's got to be immediately convertible into gold at the holder's choice, not at the central bank's choice.
And Alistair, that's one of the other prongs that kind of came up, the question that I wanted to go, as we look forward to next year, because all of a sudden there's value to having a higher gold price for the central banks. Conceivably, because the argument always is there's not enough gold to go around to make this happen. Well, there's plenty of gold to go around if the price is higher.
Well, exactly, you're absolutely right about that, and I think that central banks and governments will be very much on the defensive. They will be dealing with a situation which they need to bring back under control, looking at it from their point of view, and the only way they can do that, as I say, is to mobilize the central bank's gold reserves. Now, they're not going to do this immediately. I mean, let us assume there's a little time in the collapse of our paper currencies. I mean, just look at it from the American government's point of view. For a start, they've been in denial about gold for a very long time. Mm-hmm. The whole of the intellectual elite, if you like, in terms of the economic establishment, thinks it's a pet rock. And they're going to advise very strongly against it, until they just haven't got a leg to stand on. And furthermore, the military complex is going to look at the situation in terms of geopolitics. Now, we know that China has made a very good attempt at cornering the physical gold market one way or the other. If you start monetizing gold through the dollar, then that is going to hand a lot of power to China. And so you're going to get that sort of objection against it. So I don't know that what I say is the most sensible way to deal with the collapse of the paper currencies. I don't know that it's actually going to happen. All I can assume is that it's just the most sensible outcome, if you like, from the point of view of governments discharging their basic duty to us as citizens. It's going to be a very, very difficult situation. Anyway, you had some more points. So.
let me ask you about these other two. One, Powell's made it really clear they are desperate for inflation. Yeah. Wait a second, at the CPI level? We can see it everywhere else, but he's desperate to spark it, and he's desperate for any type of fiscal policy that allow him to monetize a couple trillion more. And so he's kind of got himself in a bit of a conundrum there, because that's only going to make things worse. I mean, from that other point of view, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. And this is the craziest thing about this. Why can't these people see that if you increase the quantity of money, you are transferring wealth from people who have money at the moment to the issuer?
They have to see that.
We could then take a cynical view, perhaps, and say, well, he would say that because he benefits from issuing currency.
Right.
Yeah, but actually, they're going around telling us all this lie. It's as simple as that this is a stimulus. No, it is not. It's a stimulus if you look at just one side of it and ignore the other. The other is that what you're doing is you're just impoverishing everybody in the economy in order to make them feel better. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's complete nonsense. And all central banks subscribe to this nonsense. Mm-hmm. And I think that, if you like, the good thing about a collapse in fiat currencies, it's going to be terrible for everybody. I mean, don't get me wrong. But there is one positive thing out of it, and that is that, once we have had it, and once, hopefully, we've gone back onto a proper gold standard, which is actually what the people want. The people don't want paper currency. They want something they can rely on, which is sound, without this transfer of wealth going to the government all the time. Once we get that, then we can get on with our lives, right, and we can be constructive about our future. But, so long as we have this situation where the zombie companies are benefiting from the transfer of wealth from you and me through the government, where the government benefits from the transfer of wealth from you and me. I mean, we're just getting all killed in all this.
Yeah.
But having said that, the process of a currency collapse is going to create real hardship amongst those who have not prepared themselves for it. And that, of course, is the vast majority of people in any community.
But not you and I and most of the people listening to us. At least we are taking the steps ahead of time. Alistair, here's one last question that came to mind. And in this, I guess, is relative to price in 2021, because this is what I'll be thinking about as I make my forecast for next year. You know, it's been hinted since last summer that the Fed has been studying and considering and looking at the history of yield curve control and the effectiveness of putting a stamp, drawing a line in the sand, saying we will not allow nominal rates to go past a certain level, say 1% on the 10-year treasury, but we will allow inflation to go up there. I mean, it gives you that, you know, that inflating away the debt type of thing that you were speaking of earlier. And also, I've told a few, you know, non-believers, if you will, you know, that have asked me, kind of traditional money manager types, when will I know that I should go all in on gold? I say, when the Fed institutionalizes, makes permanent negative real rates, which is what yield curve control would do. So my final point, my final question to you is, do you see that as a possibility? Is that something you might see coming next year?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, they're going to try anything. Let's face it, Craig.
Yeah.
But as to whether it'll succeed, it won't succeed. Of course it won't. Because the problem basically is not, you know, the level of interest rates which they set anywhere along the real curve. The problem is they're printing money at huge, huge and accelerating quantities. That is the problem. Now, one point which we must make about interest rates is that the idea that you can control economic activity by varying interest rates is complete lunacy. What has happened is that the central banks have used the, if you like, the move of the American economy and also the UK economy. It's particularly notable in our two economies. The move from being production-based before the 1980s gradually into becoming financially based. In other words, it's financial this, financial that, financial services. You know, that's the way everything is done. What they have done is by doing that, they have got greater control over the interest rate. But the one thing you cannot argue against is the situation where, let's say, I'm going to lend money to you. Now, the rate at which I lend money to you is not going to be set by the Fed or the Bank of England. I'm going to look at it, you know, this is going to be lent to you, let's say, for 5 years or something because you've got a project. I'm going to start thinking about, well, what's that money going to be worth in 5 years' time? Yeah. What will it buy me in 5 years' time? Therefore, what rate of interest do I need to compensate for that change in value? Now, I mean, if I assume that the value is of money is going to go up, which would be the case perhaps with gold in certain circumstances, then that would be a far lower rate of interest than I would expect if I was lending you fiat, because that fiat has gone out of my, you know, it's gone out of my control. I'm not going to get it back until 5 years' time. What's it going to buy in 5 years' time? Now, the answer to that is that it requires an interest rate far higher than anything that is set at the moment. It's something that you and I will end up agreeing. And equally, from your point of view, you will look at it and you'll think, okay, I've got this project. I've got to pay Alistair back in 5 years' time. What's that money going to be worth in 5 years' time? Well, I can see that with the way inflation is, however you define it, I can see that it's going to be worth less in 5 years' time than it is now. So I'm going to get a benefit. So in other words, there's a wealth transfer between Alistair as the saver lending you money and you gaining that wealth as the borrower. So what's the offset going to be? And there is absolutely, I mean, the thing that is actually very important about this is that if we start looking at this from the point of view of foreign entities, the people who have got $28.6 trillion, if you like, of financial investments and cash, for them to you know, maintain that, to hang on to that, rather than sell it for something else, whether it's commodities or other currencies, doesn't really matter. The point is that they're going to turn around and think, hold on, this dollar is going down. We know that what's going to happen is that the US budget deficit has increased substantially. That is going to lead, because it always does, unless you've got an increase in savings, to a higher level of trade deficit. So as a country, we're going to get more dollars coming in because we export to America. What do we want to do with that, given that we've already got a huge position in dollars? Mm-hmm. The answer is that, you know, the rate of interest at which we will hold on to those dollars has got to be considerably higher than what it is at the moment.
But Alistair, hold it. Isn't that a conundrum, though? Because the existing debt that's already been created, both public and private, has to be serviced. And at higher rates, that's just deflationary.
Well, it's higher rates are what's required to stabilize the dollar. I don't like thinking in terms of deflation, because that, I think, confuses the issue. What we're looking at is what level of interest rate is going to be required next year to stabilize the dollar. It's going to be a lot higher than 1%.
But can they let that happen?
That's my argument.
But what I'm saying, though, is if you're already servicing the debt and it's $500 billion a year as a line item,
yep.
And you say you have to let interest rates rise to stabilize the dollar. I mean, it's almost like a taking from Peter to pay Paul type of thing.
Well, your problem is that a rise in interest rates of the sort that I'm talking about will do two things. It will expose government finances as basically being bust.
Right.
Unless they really cut and massively cut public spending.
And that's not going to happen.
Well, I wouldn't have thought so. And the second thing is that ever since the Lehman crisis, the Fed basically has been pumping money into the economy in order to save zombie companies.
Mm-hmm.
Higher interest rates are going to kill those zombie companies too.
Right.
I mean, the effect of this is going to be, I mean, I think it is misleading to call it deflation. It basically will drive the US economy into a very deep slump unless the Fed can come up with an answer. But the only answer they can come up with is to print more money.
Right.
That's what they're there for. So you can see what I am saying in a rather convoluted way is that the collapse of the US economy and the dollar are going to happen together. And I think it is going to happen really very rapidly once it starts.
And how has it not already started? I mean, we were headed down this path, obviously, and all the COVID crisis and lockdown have done is just kind of sped us along. I was joking at the election, Alistair. The only difference between Biden and Trump was how fast the train was going over the cliff.
In monetary terms, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And so the end, do we own enough precious metal? I mean, I just don't see an alternative. And then what happens if this breaks, you know, the fractional reserve system of the LBMA and the CME? I just don't see how. Again, I don't want to sound like I'm Pollyanna, head in the sand, but man, oh man, it's hard to envision a scenario where precious metals prices in dollar terms collapse.
Yeah. Well, I think there is another aspect to this, which I think is desperately important to help people understand their way through this. And that is, if you look at what's happening to the dollar, it's not actually prices rising. It is the purchasing power of the dollar collapsing. Now, if you measure that against sound money, and there is only one sound money at the end of the day, and that is gold, possibly silver as well. That's a slightly separate topic. Then what you're going to see is the purchasing power measured in gold as money, not an investment, as money, will rise relative to the dollar. But it doesn't stop there. If this collapse continues on the way in which we have just been discussing, then the purchasing power of gold itself will rise in real terms. And I'll give you an example, which I've given, you know, on other broadcasts as well. In early 1923, in Germany, you could buy a 6-bedroom house in a smart suburb of Berlin for $100. Now, $100 at that time represented just under 5 ounces of gold. 5 ounces of gold buys a 6-bedroom house in a posh part of a major city. Now, that is what happens to the purchasing power of gold in a fiat money collapse. So what we're looking at, I mean, I'm trying to answer your question. You know, are you going to mess around with trading gold Or are you actually going to look and think, why am I buying gold? Why, you know, what's the point? I've got to understand why I'm doing this. And if you can understand that, then you answer the question. But I really do think the people who just trade it are going to miss the whole point.
Right.
I mean, there was always a point where they will say, well, gold has risen far enough, I'm going to sell it. Okay, so I'm going to sell it. I'm going to wait for it to come back. Now, they don't understand that this is not something you should trade. It is not like an investment. It is not like, a stock or anything like that. We're talking about hanging on to real money, which when everything collapses, will still retain its purchasing power, but probably will benefit in its purchasing power because people will be very desperate to get it.
Could you say, Alistair, I've not thought of it this way, but with gold up 20% in dollar terms year to date, and that, let's say the most accurate measure is that Chapwood Index, the real return of your gold year to date is 10%?
Yep. Well, yes. But I mean, again, what I'm saying is that you can use that as a measure, if you like, to sort of try and work out in this process, you know, how cheap, if you like, measured in dollar terms, gold is, and therefore, you know, some sort of feeling as to where it might go. But doing all that is very easy to miss the point, and that is that we are talking about real money versus fiat currency. If I am right about the inflationary outlook, with the Fed already committed to a hyperinflation course, then there is no answer to this. You do not have any dollars. You just have gold. You might have silver if you believe that silver at the end of the day will have a monetary role. That is a separate question. And so far, I mean, obviously, we've seen silver has performed really pretty well. I mean, it's up 80-odd% from that March bottom. But as I say, the way to look at it is gold is sound money. Don't mess around with gold on the basis that this is an investment and I will take my profits in dollars, because the dollars in which you take your profits will be worthless.
That's right. That's right. Alistair, I've kept you far longer than I promised. Excuse me. But you're always so generous with your time and your wisdom and your experience. And this has been a very, very helpful. Perhaps we should just leave it here at this point, going back to the where we started, which was, starting to forecast for 2021. Let's just suffice to say, probably higher prices.
Yeah. Yes. As you may imagine, I don't make forecasts on the gold price.
Oh, that's a sadomasochistic type thing. I do that just to give food for the trolls.
Yeah. Okay. I can understand that. But, you know, again, this is not an investment. We're talking about sound money. Yeah. And that's the way to look at it.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
You may as well try and come up with a forecast. It would be a lot more relevant to come up with a forecast as to the purchasing power of the dollar, say, in 6 months' time.
Yeah. That's an excellent point.
Equally difficult to come up. I mean, you know, it may be completely worthless.
Right. But I think, though, it too, for some people, as a derivative of that, if you will, that's probably not the right word to use. But, you know, if you think that all of this combines, even just to send gold 20% higher in dollar terms next year, that impacts a lot of things. That impacts your silver, that impacts your mining shares, and any investment plans you may have for next year. So this is all important to consider for folks. And I think you've done a wonderful job of explaining why, in that fundamental, you know, big picture type of view, why we continue to hold precious metal and add more.
Yep. Well, I hope I've been helpful in that respect. Because
you certainly have. You always are.
Well, the more people understand actually what's happening to money, the better they can look after themselves. And I think that's desperately important for all of us. I believe we have a duty to do that.
That's right. Alistair, one of these days we're going to get past this lockdown crapola. And I missed you the last time I was over there in England. But next time we're going to get together. We're going to grab Mr. Turk. Maybe we'll grab Andrew, anybody else who wants to join us, and we're all going to have ourselves some sort of adult beverage. How does that sound?
I think not only an adult beverage, but we will have a wonderful rip-roaring lunch or dinner. I mean,
yes.
That sounds good to me.
And you know what? And I doubt that we're going to be able to, we'd get by with just one adult beverage too. It's probably going to have to be more than one.
Well, of course, we don't know what the purchasing power of the pound will
Good
be.
Point.
We have to save up to buy a pint of beer.
Good point. Well, anyway, Merry Christmas, Alistair, and Happy New Year, and hang in there. You keep yourself safe and healthy and well, and I suspect we will be visiting again sometime soon.
Well, thank you for that and the compliments. I hope all your followers have a wonderful Christmas too. And just stop worrying about it. Forget that gold is an investment. Just think of it as sound money. Have some under your belt and then just make merry.
Right. Exactly. My friend, all the best. Thank you for your time.
That was very much my pleasure, Craig.
All of us here at TFMR, thank you for listening. We'll have another Thursday conversation next week.